Northwestern Medicine, relentless in their pursuit of better health care. Learn more at nm.org/better.
Our weekend health segment with a special guest this week. If you watch our WGN TV morning news, you've seen Dr. Lauren Stryker many, many times joining us and talking about the health issues of the day. Dr. Stryker is a professor at Northwestern University Medical School, the medical correspondent for the WGN Morning News. She is an author. She is the host of Dr. Stryker's Inside Information podcast. And I know from personal experience, a pretty good cook, because when I'm getting ready to do my weekly cooking segment on WGN, it's general. Dr. Stryker is generally a segment or two before me. So she's waiting in the wings to go on while I'm preparing food. And we often chat about food and what are you cooking, and this is what I do. So she brings many, many topics of expertise to the table here this morning. Dr. Stryker, welcome to the show. Nice to have you with us.
So nice to be here. I was kind of complimented yesterday when your producer called and said our normal doctor can't be on. And I thought, oh, so what, I'm the abnormal doctor?
Apparently.
It's always lovely to spend time with you. And one of my great disappointments in life is I never get to eat that delicious food that I watch you making. I wish I could.
Right, right, right. Because it's not quite finished usually when you're in the zone. Or Larry and Robin have swooped in. And, I'm pretty sure that none of them ate any food at all last week. Last Wednesday, I made a pasta dish with pesto made out of asparagus. And it just had a lovely, light asparagus taste. And it was so delicious. And I have never seen people eat food like they were eating the asparagus pesto last week. I think you would have enjoyed it.
That sounds so good. Did you put pine nuts in it?
I did put, pine nuts in it. I put olive oil in it. I put a couple of handfuls of fresh spinach, but it was mostly fresh asparagus that I just very quickly, lightly blanched and turned it into this delicious
cream. I finally have learned the trick of throwing it into ice water. Because I love to make asparagus, and if you make it a little bit in advance, especially if you're having company, there's nothing worse than soggy, limp asparagus, right?
Yep.
So I finally learned the trick that you plunge it into the ice water.
Yep. It shocks. Then you can, it shocks it and keeps it.
Shocks it.
Turns it nice and green, and you're all set.
Yes.
Well, normally we talk. This segment started 3 years ago with COVID. And it's evolved into talking about all kinds of different health issues now. So, actually, I'm glad you can join us today. And I hope whether or not our, quote, normal doctor can be here or not, I hope that you can join us with some regularity, to bring. Because you always have fantastic health tips when you join us on the morning news. But one of the things that I was so interested in, because we've done so many stories on women not getting routine health examinations, health examinations, mammograms, all the things that women should be doing during the pandemic, because there was mostly televisits during that time. And I wonder if that has picked up at all. And I wonder if that's changed and how important it is for women to get in there and do those routine checks.
Well, sadly, we have not seen a huge return to those in-office visits for a variety of reasons. And quite frankly, women very often don't go to the doctor routinely for a, quote, well-woman visit anyway. They go if they need contraception. They go if they're pregnant. They go as they get older, if they're having specific problems. But the idea of going to your doctor to have a routine gynecologic exam particularly is really, the numbers are way, way down. And part of this is insurance. Even if you do have insurance, usually one well-woman visit is covered. And if you're going to take your pick when you're 50 or 60, it's generally not going to be the gynecologist. It's going to be an internist or a family medicine doctor. And quite frankly, the belly button to the knees has become somewhat of a no-fly zone. So they're not getting routine gynecologic exams. And to your point, when we look at screening tests such as mammography, et cetera, they're not getting that either. Either they are just, it's not on their radar, or as you said, you know, nobody wants to go. They're so used to televisits. And we are starting to see the repercussions of this. We're seeing increase in cervical cancers. We're seeing increase in breast cancer that's being detected at a later stage because they're not getting early detection. We are seeing one of the other big things in the news is an increase in sexually transmitted infections because people are not going to the doctor.
And what's the rule now for mammograms? Because it seems like over the last 20 or 30 years, it's changed a little bit, the age at which women should go to get mammograms. What in a perfect world, yeah, if women were going, what is the correct time to go?
Yeah, well, so that's one of the confusions is that we have different medical organizations that are coming out with different recommendations. And so in a low-risk women, for the most part, most people say you should start to get an annual mammogram at age 40. Some professional organizations come out and say, no, you can wait until you're 50. So there's that confusion. But the bigger confusion, quite frankly, is when do you stop? Because women are very often told you don't need to get a mammogram after a certain age, say 60, 65. Mm-hmm. And it doesn't make a lot of sense because what really makes sense is to look at the individual. There's a big difference between a 75 or an 80-year-old who, quite frankly, doesn't have long to live because they've got a lot of other medical problems,
right,
versus the person who's healthy and vigorous and you think they're going to continue to be great for another 10, 15, 20 years. Well, that person should get their mammogram because you do want to detect a breast cancer that may end up reversing their good health. So it is so individual, but you are so correct, Dean. It gets very confusing because not only do the recommendations change, but they vary from society to society.
Yeah, what your response to that just brought back so many memories. My mom, I think she was about 80, maybe 82 something, felt a lump and went and had it checked and tested and so forth. And she did have breast cancer. And the doctors said, we're just going to keep an eye on this. We're not going to do anything about it. Which, you know, when you hear cancer right away, you know, you think, get this out of me, get rid of it. But she said, your mom is, you know, 82. This is not going to be the thing that kills her because of her age. You know, everything, I guess, was, you know, slows down. Never did manifest itself into anything.
Yeah, and that's an important point because cancer is a very scary word, but there's cancers and there's cancers. And certainly we have cancers that can be very aggressive and can spread very quickly, and others that are very slow and very indolent, and it's totally appropriate to just watch and wait and see before you jump in with aggressive treatment.
Right, yeah, and is exactly what we did. So maybe one of the top medical stories of the week has been the issue of the so-called abortion pill. Can you talk about what this is a little bit and what this means?
Yeah.
If it becomes unavailable, what does it mean to women and making choices for themselves?
Yeah. So the pill specifically is mifepristone, and this has been around. It's been FDA approved for years now. And there's really two aspects to this. One is what it means for the courts to overturn a drug that's gotten FDA approval. Just what does that mean in a general sense? And then, of course, what does it mean specifically with this pill? So if we talk first about just the general, is it okay for the court to come in and overturn what the FDA has approved? And this is really frightening because the people behind this, of course, are doing it for political reasons because they're anti-choice. But if they are suddenly, if this is a new precedent that's set, that they can just come in and overturn the science, that they can overturn what the FDA has very, very carefully vetted before it puts it out there to the public, well, this sets a precedent for other drugs. I mean, someone else can come along and say, well, you know, Viagra was only tested in a couple thousand men, and it has all kinds of nasty side effects, and it's killed people, and let's just have some judge decide to take that off the market. So to me, that's quite frankly, and I'm very, you know, pro-reproductive rights and pro-choice, but in this case, to me, the bigger issue is that we have the courts coming in and suddenly saying that they have the ability to overturn a drug and what that's going to mean in terms of healthcare in general. But specifically for mifepristone, to your point, this is not just about reproductive rights. This is about women's health. This is really frightening because this particular medication is not only used to very safely and effectively terminate an undesired pregnancy, early on, but it's also used for other medical conditions, such as a tubal pregnancy, an ectopic pregnancy, or even a miscarriage. And so now women are suddenly going to be in a position where their doctor's hands are tied and they may be bleeding. They may have a life-threatening tubal pregnancy that can rupture, and suddenly their doctor says, sorry, I can't do anything, or I need to do surgical, so surgical procedure, which is far, far riskier. So in addition to really, really limiting the ability to get a safe early abortion, this is also going to have an enormous impact on women's health. And that's really frightening. It's also kind of interesting, though. This is, to my knowledge, and I'm not a lawyer, of course, but to my knowledge, this is the first time that someone was able to try and overturn something that has gone to the states and is, you know, making it basically a national mandate. And it's, quite frankly, very clever on their part to have gone to the FDA, because that was really a workaround to not have to go state by state to limit women's reproductive rights.
Yeah.
So
I didn't know too much about
scary.
I didn't know too much about the, you know, the X's and O's of the medication itself. But what was a red flag to me that came up during the week with all these discussions were non-medical people making medical decisions.
Right. Exactly.
And that's, you know, regardless of the medication, do you want a bunch of politicians deciding, you know, things that doctors and scientists should be making decisions on?
Exactly. And Dean, that was my first point.
Yeah,
that if we put aside the whole issue about reproductive rights and women's health, but just the idea, I mean, it'd be kind of like if the judges came in and said, you know, we don't like how the FAA is deciding how planes are going to fly.
Oh.
So we're going to change that, you know, how the pilot flies the plane. And it's like, what? Are you kidding? You know, this is not your area of expertise.
Right.
You
or
can't just
we don't like this.
Can't weigh in on this.
Yeah, we don't like this diabetes medicine. We don't like this heart medication. You know, for whatever reason.
Right.
It just seems like medical
but just,
and science.
Just to be
people,
clear.
Yeah.
Absolutely. But I do want to be clear that mifepristone, according to every single physician, scientist, the FDA, this drug is safe. It is effective. It is, quite frankly, it's used in over 50% of elective abortions, early abortions. These are very, very early pregnancy terminations. And they start talking about, you know, the psychological issues. I mean, quite frankly, it's been studied every day from Wednesday and has been shown that the only psychological issue that women have post-abortion is relief. And this is not controversial. You know, we have solid, hard science. We have good numbers. And this is not a dangerous drug. This is a safe drug. And what people forget is if you look at the risk of pregnancy, pregnancy is dangerous. Pregnancy is very dangerous. The risk of dying or having a serious complication from pregnancy, particularly in this country. I mean, the thing that is astonishing is that the states that have the worst abortion laws, the most restrictive abortion laws, are also the states that have the highest maternal mortality and the poorest coverage of preterm babies and pediatric care. So, yeah, you know, the agenda is clearly not health. The agenda are from health as can be. And these states would be well served to address the egregious maternal mortality that we are seeing, particularly among Black women.
Dr. Lauren Stryker is with us this week, answering your questions at 312-981-7200, a text from the 815 area code. Please discuss the age of women no longer needing gynecological exams. Why not after age 60, as is recommended now?
Yeah, the age when they should stop getting gynecologic exams is when they die. Now, granted, I have a little bit of a skewed point of view, but this is something I actually talk about quite a bit because, you know, again, women over the age of 65 are often just minimized in terms of the importance of bladder health, sexual health, heart health. All of these things are actually tied into gynecologic health. And the internists are not doing pelvic exams. Let's be real clear. You know, the American College of Physicians, which is the internist organization, came out about 8-9 years ago and said that a woman doesn't need to have a gynecologic exam unless she has a problem. And no problem, you know, doesn't mean anything if someone doesn't know they have a problem. Someone needs to look and see. But be that as it may, the internists were all thrilled with this because it meant they could throw out their speculums and not do exams. And women are being harmed by this, because by the time they start to have a severe problem, they come to us, and it's something that could have been detected in its early stages years ago. And even particularly when we look at Pap tests for the screen for cervical cancer, and there's, you know, this new recommendation that over age of 65, women don't need Pap tests. Well, now we're seeing the repercussions of that, and we're seeing an increase in cervical cancer in women over the age of 65, and vulvar cancers and vaginal cancers. And in fact, on my podcast, I did an episode about 4 or 5 years ago with someone from the U.S. task force who'd been setting that recommendation. And I said, so did you guys mess it up? Were you wrong? And she said, yeah, we were wrong, you know, in this no over 65, no exam. So the question is a great question, because it is confusing and women are given misinformation, and I think they need to be examined.
Yeah. 262 area code says, stop pushing only mammography for breast exam. Start pushing thermography. What's the difference between the two? I don't think I've ever heard of the difference.
Thermography, you haven't heard of it because it's completely worthless, with all due respect to the caller. There is no medical organization that condones it. It is absolutely not beneficial. It has not been effective in terms of early detection. And every single physician in this world comes out strongly recommending against it. People make money very often by pushing things that have not been shown to be effective. And thermography is in that category. And this isn't my opinion. This is the opinion of every single medical organization that is involved in early detection of breast cancer. So mammography is not perfect. Certainly there are issues with mammography. It is meant to be screening. It's not meant to be a definitive diagnosis. And right now it's the best that we have at early detection. And early detection is how we save lives from breast cancer.
773 area code says, is there a link between hypothyroidism and having previous COVID? Is there a link between hypothyroidism and having previous COVID?
Not to my knowledge, but I will also say that while I do follow what's going on in the COVID world, I did not always know some of these smaller studies that have come out looking at things such as that. But to my knowledge, there is not a link.
Okay. All right. Very good. Well, that answers that question. And hey, there's your first segment. I thought it went really well. What'd you think?
That's it? We're done?
We're done.
I didn't get to talk about all this other stuff.
It goes fast.
It always is. But you know what? But the other thing also, Dean, is I also appreciate, you know, when I do the news, I have like 3 minutes, 4 minutes at best. And so often I have a topic that I really want to get into more detail and talk about, and that's just not the way it works. So I always love when we can take a little more time and do a little bit deeper dive into these topics.
Yeah, we did a deep dive into quite a few things here today. I thought it was really interesting. Mm-hmm. And next time we'll get more things that you sent us on the list. Dr. Lauren Stryker, professor at Northwestern, and you see her regularly on WGN-TV Morning News. Really appreciate your time, and we'll look forward to seeing you this week, I hope.
This week. I will be seeing you on Wednesday, 9:15.
Very good. We'll see you then. Thank you.